take your time.
Good evening. This is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guests tonight are the one, the only, Stephen Dorado, photographer, professor of practice in visual and performing arts department of Clark University, and photographer David Grosshoff. Now, he is part of a show called The Affected Landscape, which is in the Schildkamp Gallery of Clark University through November 30th. Welcome, both of you. We're first going to talk to Stephen. Stephen, it's so good to talk to you again.
Oh, I just love you, and I love your show.
Now, this is a really interesting show. I've seen the works in it. It's really fascinating. Talk to me. You're the curator. Talk to me about how you pulled these four artists together.
So this was a show that came directly out of COVID.
Yeah, I have to say this. Stephen, every artist I've talked to for the last year, every one of their projects came out of COVID. And you know the scary thing is, I think artists secretly loved COVID because it gave them time to think about a lot of stuff.
That's no secret. That's the absolute truth. And that's what happened here, is that I occupied my private time, isolation, lockdown, by reaching out to people all over the world, sometimes by Zoom, and sometimes by just passively going through Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. And, of course, never relentlessly looking for great new talents to, of course, steal from them for my own work. You know, I've been watching the development of four different artists that work in the medium of photography. And I really mean that. They're not like documentary photographers, per se, but they're expressionists. And I was handed over the curatorial position to run the Schildkamp Gallery at Clark University. It's like a three-year thing where it gets passed around like a hot potato. And I just decided to have a lot of fun with it and have my opening show, like you just said, The Affected Landscape. And so and it hit me that, you know, the thing about COVID is that people ran away either by way of going into the woods or alone in the landscape or hide in their office for the last 2.5 years. And I noticed there was a common thread with landscape. And the four people that are in the show, and you're going to be talking to David in just a few minutes, but the other one is Pete Mawney, who is from Tivoli, New York, and Anne Rollins from Upperville, Virginia, and then, of course, Seth David Rubin from Kingston, New York. And all four of them have been working independently, ravenously, just scouring landscape from their point of view, incredibly instinctive, expressive ways of working, and assemblages. All four of them work on some form of assemblage. And so all I had to do was just bring all four together, convince them to show at Clark University and hang this stunning show. It's a very entertaining show, by the way. I'm very proud of it.
How many pieces are in the show?
It varies. We have an installation for Pete Mawney, which is simply a lot. When I invited Pete to come out to show specific, I'm laughing, his firefly photos, he came out with something totally different. And that's Pete. Most of his work right now is roadside long exposure images up and down the New Jersey Turnpike and the Hudson River Valley area. He's going to be on, I think, next week to talk more about
that. Right.
I won't get involved.
Now, the only person I'm not going to be talking to is Anne Rowland. Can you say a word about her work so she's the least represented?
You know, Anne is the most enigmatic person I've ever met in my life. We bonded a couple of years ago, again, through by way of Facebook, and we started talking back and forth, mostly by just letters. And I love trading with artists, and I convinced her to trade with me. And so I get some of these amazing landscapes. And then out of nowhere, she started creating these topographic, huge, enormous, like 4 by 7 feet big tapestries, combining Google Maps along with personal images from her own stock of photos. And I you know, Anne, I think you do this. No, I don't. Anne, you do that. No, I don't. So no, really. I mean, it's one of the most difficult. And, you know,
I've talked to artists like that.
Yeah. You know, I
everything you say is wrong.
Yeah, I said your work is politically motivated. Hey, when you're, you know, photographing or pulling images from Google of bomb sites in Ukraine, I'm like, oh, you're political. No, I'm not. I'm like, oh, my God. But they're stunning. There's two huge ones in the gallery, and there's a smaller one that's maybe about 3 by 4 feet big. You know, what I did say, her work is inspired by unlimited access to Google satellite maps. Mm-hmm. As a material, selecting and manipulating hundreds of images. She stitches these, and she'll say, no, I don't stitch them. What they call quote. No. So I'm just giving you kind of a roughness. All I can say is that when you're up against one of these, it's sublime. Because, Mark, you keep walking closer and closer to this, what appears to be tapestry, but then you realize you're looking at parking lots how many miles above the earth, and you're seeing fields and you're seeing strip mines. They're absolutely mind-blowing. So that's what I can say about her. I actually think that she's on the cusp of becoming a really big deal in the art world. And it's okay if she's aloof. It's fine. The work speaks for itself. I know, that's kind of a cop-out, right? The work speaks for itself. But it will be taken care of. I'm sure it will. So that expresses, like I said, Anne. And whereas I've actually been in touch with Seth David Rubin for years now. And actually, I give full credit to Seth for introducing me to Pete because of his fireflies. And the minute I saw one, I was an absolute fan and pursued him and got him involved with the show. And David, who's right next to me, and you're going to be talking to him in about 2 seconds, we reached out to each other through a Facebook private group that has to do with large format photography, at least 5 years ago, right? Maybe, yeah, five years ago. Yep. And we became really kindred spirits, which you all will, all your audience will within seconds listening to him. I'm going to make him blush now. Just a phenomenal human being, the most human of humans that I know. And his work, again, is astounding, and I'll let him express all of that.
Now, before you go, where and what are the hours of the gallery, and where on campus is it?
Yeah, it's in 92 Downing Street. It's the Trainer Center for the Arts. It's if you're in the area, it's near Peppercorn's off of Park Ave here in Worcester. The hours vary, so I'm going to just rough it out because we are an institution that has holidays. I apologize for all of you who went last weekend because we're on break. But we're usually 9 to 5 during the week. And then weekends, we open, like Saturday, I think it's 12 to 5. Okay. And Sunday, probably, I'm going to safely say 12 to 5 as well. We might be able to sneak in around 6, but we just say 12 to 5 both Saturday and Sunday. So 9 to 5 again during the week.
Great. Pass it off to David.
There you go,
David. Yep.
David, cool. Such a pleasure to talk to you.
Likewise.
Now, you work very complexly, and you work in several different formats. The work that's in this show is only one aspect of the photography work that you do, correct?
Correct, yeah.
Because you do a lot of portrait work.
Yes, yeah, I have done a lot of portrait work, and I long to do this some more. But, Stephen is right. COVID was a problem.
It was a problem in that it just made you do a lot of work.
Yeah, and I had some extra time on hand. I have a daytime job. I'm a sound engineer for the theater school in Amsterdam. And we have been open during COVID for a long time, but we've also had a few lockdowns.
Now, I want to talk to you about how you got into this specific kind of photography. And it's chronotography. Is that the word for it? But you studied sociology and later sonology. Did you start out as a photographer?
No, this gradually grew on me, actually. So
talk to me what brought you to photography from sociology and sonology, but then you also were working at the Academy of Theater and Dance in Amsterdam.
Yeah, I think the photography accidentally. I had a Sony Mavica back in the day, and I liked to toy around with it because it was such a quirky camera with floppy disks. And later I got an iPhone, and one day I noticed it was full because I had taken 10,000 photos with it. So then I realized I needed a better camera, and I bought something that allowed to replace the lenses. And then I got really nerdy about lenses.
Everybody who goes down that road gets nerdy about lenses.
And I realized I needed a bigger camera. So then first, I got myself a medium format camera, and then I became a member of the Facebook group of this back in the day, interesting, called Medium and Large Format Film Photography. And this is how I met Steven and got in contact with the bigger cameras, the 8x10s, and I really loved his work. And that was the last push that I needed to get myself a 4x5. And I immediately started shooting portraits with that. So I skipped the red filter landscapes phase altogether.
Now, you've written that you approach your portraits like a visual artist, like a painter. And your portraits are really amazing. What are you looking for when you do your portraits? What are you trying to capture? What do you want?
I'm trying to capture the friendship rather than the friend.
Got it.
Yeah. So these are all people that I photographed that I know or at least have met for some time. I had good conversations with. So every single one of them I know personally. So I do not like to go on assignments. I get asked to. I quickly learned I should not do that.
Now, you studied sonology, which yeah. most people have probably never even heard of. Talk about what that is and why were you attracted to it?
I realized at some point I was studying sociology, which is more familiar to people.
Yeah.
But at some point I just had to give in and realize that I'm an artist and I had to go to the conservatory. And they had this course. And I liked it a lot. The music is very odd. So it's very much based on Varese and Stockhausen electronic music, very brainy composed music. So not EDM, but electronic music altogether. And it's the best choice that I ever made in my life. My parents were really, really angry for giving up the sociology university career. But it's the best thing I ever did.
Do you listen to people like Brian Eno?
I do.
I just was on the way in here. I was listening to his brand new release just this morning before I came on the air, which is really beautiful.
Okay.
Now, sonology translates and leads you into a different form of photography. And talk to me about what that is.
I think the sound aspect of it is this. So I lived in Amsterdam for a decade. Now I live just outside of it. We have all these canals. Around the canals, a lot of bats fly around, and people do not notice them.
Yeah.
I could hear like a hawk could see, and I could hear bats, not the sonar per se, but I could hear their communications. And so I was very aware of all the bats flying around me in the evening.
Do you know what species of bats you have in Holland?
It's small dwarf bat.
Okay.
And then there are some variants of that, and one is simply called the late flyer. but they're nice animals. I was very so I wanted to capture those, and I sent you a sound file of me.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Amsterdam. I'm not sure if you could play that.
Well, we're going to play that at the end of the interview. We'll play that.
And
for people who have never heard bats before, and it's interesting listening to your sound files because you can hear people talking in the background and conversing, and they seem to be totally ignorant of these like staccato, like weird sounds that are...
Yeah.
Now, can you just listen to them, and if you are aware of them, or are you doing something special with the recording?
Well, I got older, so I needed a hearing aid, which is called a bat detector.
Okay.
And it's for this recording, it's focused at 40 kilohertz, and it translates all the high frequencies down to frequencies that we can hear.
Now, are these the sounds that the bats use to locate prey?
Correct. Yeah.
Wow. So they're sending out this like constant. It's really wild sounding, and they're trying to locate stuff to eat.
Exactly. Yeah, and it's very energetic. It's a really they're really loud. It's just that they're really, really loud. And the only thing that disturbs them is rattling bikes.
Really?
So, yeah, they're also very loud in the high frequencies.
Oh, so wait a minute. Does that interfere with their sounds? Like, because they're dependent upon stuff, the sound bouncing back to them.
Yeah.
And then it's when there's a distortion that they know that there's prey. So when the bikes go by, does that just totally screw them up?
Yeah, they shut up for a few seconds until the bike is gone, and then they restart again.
Wow, that's fascinating, David.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. So you're recording these bats.
Yeah.
How does this translate into the photographs that we see in this exhibition? Go ahead.
To show how they fly.
Yeah.
Because there are all these stories about bats flying in your hair, but they actually make beautiful circles and patterns, and I wanted to grab that. And So this is something that I was looking for. I actually talked to Pete Mooney for the technicalities of it to get it started, because at first I did not really succeed. And
well, it's incredibly difficult because you have these sort of repeated shots of bats in flight. So it's almost like you're seeing a continued image of them as they
fly. It's not really complicated, but it's tedious.
That's interesting. I like the fact. But is it tedious good or tedious bad?
It takes a lot of time.
I look at these and I go, how the F did you possibly take that shot?
So I walk around with a rolling camera, which is actually my iPhone. So I walk around with my iPhone filming constantly.
Got.
As soon as I go to, as soon as I find a place where I see interesting birds or bats, then I quickly compose the image, moving camera around. The camera is already on my tripod, and then after my walk, I will select short bits where the birds or the bats made interesting curves while flying, and then these short bits of video I load into Photoshop, which takes a quarter of an hour just to load.
Oh, jeez.
Then Photoshop has a method of stacking all these images. So there are, say, between 100 and 500 frames in each of those photos. And the game in Photoshop that I play is that for each pixel, it takes the darkest variant out of all the frames that are in the picture.
Wow.
So Photoshop spends a lot of time calculating this. So selecting the exact bits of video that I'll use takes a lot of time, and then having Photoshop run the process takes a lot of time, and then the photo gets a lot darker than the video was, and then I have to deal with the noise, and then I do color grading because the colors go bad in the whole process. So there are all these steps. Every photo is about 4 hours of work after taking the video.
Now, you don't just work on bats, and you work on a variety of birds. Did you just go out and explore and see where birds were congregating so you knew when you could take pictures of them? Typically, these are birds, jackdaws, geese.
Yeah.
I know jackdaws really well. You've had starlings, which always form these huge flocks, but you have to be in the right place at the right time in order to get these sort of sequential photographs of these birds flying.
Yeah, so when I moved to Hilversum, close to Amsterdam, next to me there was an apartment building being built.
The Gasholder apartment?
Sorry?
The Gasholder apartment?
Yeah, exactly, those, yeah. Those apartment buildings were being made, and there was a huge crane, and the local jackdaw flock decided to make that their home base for their... meetings. And so they would gather there by thousands, by 2,000 or 3,000 of those.
Wow.
And this is actually a good 2% of the local bat population, local jackdaw population in the Netherlands. I didn't realize. I thought there were just more and more jackdaws.
Well, for people who are listening who don't know what jackdaws are, they're a kind of corvid, they're a kind of crow. But they're smaller, and they have a smaller bill than a crow, and they have gray on the nape of the neck.
Yeah, and they're more social. So
they are. They're tremendously social.
And if you the jackdaws quickly became my friends, so to say, and they approach me a lot more now. I can even feed them if they're at the train station.
Oh, cool. Cool.
And they're family birds. So if you look close at them, you will see them fly in pairs. So even within the big flock, you will see pairs. And then after they got their young, you see them fly by the four or by the five of them. And so they're family birds.
One of the effects of this photography is the movements of the bats and the birds in themselves form fantastic sort of images. Patterns. Like when you have a jackdaws at the Gasholder apartments that's in the show. And when you look at the sequential images of the jackdaws, it actually looks like stitching. You know, it looks like stitching in cloth. It's amazing the patterns these things form when you take this kind of photograph.
Yeah, sometimes they look like barbed wire.
Yeah, that's exactly those are the jackdaws I was talking about. Look like barbed wire.
Yeah. So by choosing the frame rate, I can decide if I want to have them connected or not. So if I shoot 60 frames per second, connected. And if I shoot 30 frames per second, they're disconnected, they're loose. Yeah. So by choosing the frame rate, I can choose whether they look like barbed wire or by cross stitches.
Now, you've also incorporated into these photographs self-portraits.
Yeah, that actually started with Rian, my girlfriend, the photo on the beach. She happened to. So I need to explain this. So the goal was always to photograph the bats, but then the jackdaws started flying through the frames. So the jackdaws became the subject.
So they were photobombing your bat photographs.
Yes, and then so next thing that happened, I was on the beach with Rian, who you see in one of the photos, and so then I thought I will keep this one frame of Rian in it. And so that photo took a lot of work. I think I worked 6 hours on that one, deleting all the other Rians from all the frames so I could still keep all the curves. And so that photo really worked, and I found my next level. And then I thought, well, I can be in the frame too. So with the one with the starlings has me in it too, very small in the background. There's me on the bike.
But there's also a really fascinating photograph of you shaking a blossoming tree.
Oh, yeah.
Describe that to the audience.
So, I can do... Now, this is a method, and the method has been done not only by me, so you can toy around with a method and have other ingredients in it. So what I did is I wanted to make a recording of these blossoming trees slowly snowing this pink flower leaves. And so I put my camera up and I waited and nothing happened. So at some point I decided to simply shake the tree and there came all the leaves. So you can see me in the frame on the right side about 20 times because I was shaking the tree and you can see me walk in and out of the frame. I decided to leave that in.
Now... doing this photography, which ends up being very beautiful, and it's really important that people understand what it takes to make one of these photographs, but they're very mysterious and they're very beautiful too.
Thank you.
Has this taken off your career? In other words, has your artistic, whatever you thought you were doing, now been sidetracked by making these photographs, and this is what you're going to do now?
No, well, actually... So the jackdaws never were the preferred subject, and I was.
It was always bats.
Yeah, I always wanted to do the bat photos, and I think with this red one with the sunset with the bats in front of it.
Yeah.
I nailed it. So I don't have to exercise the method on the jackdaws anymore. So I will need to find something else.
You don't want to just stay with bats. You could go around the world and like photograph really fascinating concentrations of bats.
Yeah, but I need an inner motivation to do that.
Okay.
Because it takes time.
It sounds like it's painstaking work.
Yeah, and so so time is always scarce. So I always have to. Everybody has to decide what to do with their time, and so I will. I have a daytime job. Well, I work in evenings a lot, but I have a daytime job as a sound engineer. So money is not the issue. And I want to keep total freedom in photography because I made a job out of doing music.
So do you
already,
also...
I have a steady income from doing something close to my heart. So it's not that I'm a bank teller and who now has the opportunity to go into arts. I have already steady income out of something close to my heart.
Got it.
And so I need something other than that, that is not bound to any rules or laws, and I can just do whatever I want and wherever my heart is. And if that's more bets, I will shoot more bets. If that is more portraiture. I will do that. I want total freedom in that.
I love that idea.
Yeah, and I have the means to do that, so why not?
Do you have a band?
Not anymore.
But did you?
Yeah.
What was the name of the band?
It was Flow Type.
What kind of sounds did you have?
There was a funk band, and I also.
Oh man, David, that's amazing.
Yeah, and also had a project with friends called Fruit Power. You can find some old videos of that.
Fruit Power?
It was me and some friends. We built synthesizers ourselves.
Oh, wow.
And synthesizers were controlled by sticking different metals into apples and oranges and what have you, and bananas.
So the sound was very experimental.
Yes, it was, yeah.
Oh, I love that. I'm a big, you know, I grew up on bands like Einstein's Neubauten. And really, like experimental bands like that, I really, really like.
Yeah, I saw Einstürzende Neubauten back in my hometown when the music theater was still being built.
So, what were they like? I never got a chance to see them live. What were they like?
Intense.
David, we're going to have to say goodbye. My guest tonight has been David Grosshoff. He's a photographer. He is one of the four photographers at a show that's right up now called The Affected Landscape in the Schildkap Gallery of Clark University up through November 30th. Be sure to see David's photographs. They are absolutely wonderful. David, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
This is Mark Lynch. You've been listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. Good night. David.